getting ready to go to Canada, Toronto, in April 5th, I believe, working on a tribute to Yogaswami event for Saturday, all the Yogaswami devotees gathering. And then on Sunday, we're visiting the Ganesha Temple, Vrata Siddhivinayagar, very supportive group. They have about five gurus up on the wall, pictures, and one of them's Gurudeva. So Gurudeva has a special place there. Yogaswami's there, and Arumuga Navalar, and I think two others. So they always arrange very appropriate events for us to speak at. Last time they printed the talk in English and Tamil and handed it out to everyone afterwards. So, very organized. So this is about worship in the home. And we'll time it here. Last year, a 71-year-old businessman from New Delhi and his wife came to the monastery on a serious pilgrimage, filled with love for Shiva and unusually deep devotion. He described his childhood memories of his father to us, who had passed away in Lahore when he was just 13, and whom he spoke of as his first guru. The father's routine was to do a morning puja to Lord Shiva for 5 hours. Imagine that. Every day, 5 hours. 7 a.m. to noon. Only then would he have lunch and go to his place of business, working from 2 p.m. to 7 p.m. Helps when you have your own business, right? Another 5 hours. Imagine if all of us devoted as much time to performing Atmartha Puja in the home shrine as we give to our job. This would certainly significantly accelerate our spiritual progress. I have a question for you. Question is, Hinduism is in no way more dynamically strengthened in the lives of children and the family than by. And by what? What's the answer? Well, the answer we're seeking is then by establishing a shrine in the home. Why is this? A number of Hindus have told us that what kept them a staunch practicing Hindu, despite exposure in their youth to other religious traditions at school and elsewhere, was the fact that the entire family practiced Hinduism together in the home. And establishing a shrine in the home definitely makes it much easier for the family to practice Hinduism together in the home. In fact, we know of families who recently purchased new homes and made their first consideration having enough bedrooms to be able to exclusively utilize one of them as the family shrine room. Let me insert a story here about training children in Hinduism that one of our devotees in Singapore shared with us. He was responsible for the Sunday morning classes at the Hindu Center of Singapore for a few years and found that a common practice was that parents would drop the children off, go shopping for 2 hours, return and pick them up, and expect the teachers at the Hindu center to have made their children better Hindus. This approach works for learning the fine arts, such as dancing or learning a musical instrument, but it does not work for Hinduism. The difference is this. For the children to learn dance and music, the parents do not need to know how to dance or play the instrument. However, for Hinduism to be learned, it is necessary for the whole family to practice it together. This is because Hinduism needs to be an integral part of the entire family's daily and weekly routine. Back to our home shrine description. The home shrine works best when it is an entire room. That way it can be strictly reserved for worship and meditation, unsullied by worldly talk or other activities. That is the ideal. However, when that is not possible, it should at least be a quiet corner of a room and more than a simple shelf or closet. Make the shrine a refuge for all family members, where they can find peace and solace, where they can connect with the gods and offer their praise, prayers, and practical needs. Naturally, as important as having a shrine is worshiping there daily. Worship in heartfelt devotion, clearing the inner channels to God and the gods, so their grace flows toward you and loved ones. Here are some suggestions as to when we can visit the home shrine. As the first activity of our day, ideally all members of the family gather together in the shrine room for a morning prayer. Modern life tends to keep us busy, so even if the time in the shrine room is short because of demanding schedules, that is fine. When leaving the home and upon returning, visiting the shrine before leaving the home helps remind us that work is worship. In other words, it helps us maintain a religious perspective during our time out of the home. Visiting the shrine upon returning to the home is helpful in dropping off any worldliness we have taken on during our time away from the home. Before important events, you can train your children to worship in the shrine before an important event in life, such as a major exam at school. When emotionally disturbed or reflecting on a personal problem, a good response to becoming upset is to visit the shrine and, with the blessings of God and the gods, spiritually center oneself and thus overcome the upset condition. Following these simple traditional practices in a sacred space within the home will do much to make Hinduism relevant to your family on a day-to-day basis. How elaborate should the home puja be? It can vary from short and simple to long and complex. The late and renowned Sri 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 Chandrasekharendra Saraswati Mahaswamiji of Kanchipuram, Kamakoti Peetham, commented on the home puja as follows. Every family must perform puja to Ishvara. Those who find it convenient to do so may conduct elaborate types of pujas after receiving proper initiation into them. Others need perform only a brief puja, not lasting more than 10 minutes or so. Office goers must offer at least this brief worship. The sacred bell must ring in every home. Daily worship in the home shrine is traditionally done before breakfast and includes a simple arati or a longer puja, singing devotional songs, reading scripture, repeating a mantra, and meditating. Your children can be trained to always bring an offering of flowers or fruits. As the children get older, they can take on greater responsibilities during the morning worship, such as leading some of the chants or songs, picking flowers in the garden, cleaning the altar before the puja, cooking the prasadam, and even learn how to do the full puja themselves. An excellent starting point for children's worship in the home is to have them pray each day to Lord Ganesha. They can pray to Ganesha before sleep each night, before going to school in the morning, and before any important events, such as a major school test, or activities such as sports events or a school pageant. Gurudeva stressed the naturalness of first worshiping Lord Ganesha when he said, "Among all the wonderful Hindu deities, Lord Ganesha is the closest to the material plane of consciousness, most easily contacted, and most able to assist us in our day-to-day life and concerns. Worship of Lord Ganesha leads the devotee most naturally to the other great gods." Gurudeva also often stressed that Lord Ganesha is a real being, not just a symbol. He said, "There are a great many liberal Hindus and or Western-influenced Hindus who don't think of Ganesha as a real being. To them, he is a symbol, a superstition, a way of explaining philosophy to children and the uneducated. I have seen him, but this has not been my experience of our loving Lord. I have seen him with mine own eye. He has come to me in visions several times and convinced my lower mind of his reality." Children take naturally to the worship of Lord Ganesha. They can start by repeating a simple mantra such as Om Shri Ganeshaya Namaha. I know some children who take delight in having their own murti of Ganapati in their room. Here's an interesting story in this regard. A 4-year-old girl has a Ganesha in her room whom she refers to as her friend, Lord Ganesha. When her younger sister was recently born, she told her parents that her new sister also needed a Ganesha murti in her room to protect her. I also know a young man about age 20 who will no longer go to the temple with his parents, but instead chooses to worship Ganesha in the privacy of his own room. As I mentioned, the worship of Lord Ganesha is helpful in overcoming all emotional problems, including anger. As he is seated on the Muladhara Chakra, tuning into his Shakti helps raise us up into the Muladhara Chakra and therefore out of anger and fear into a calm, stable state of mind. In fact, you can slowly seal off these lower states of mind and keep awareness permanently lifted above fear and anger through the regular worship of Lord Ganesha. Here is a practice I suggest to children and youth when they tell me they have a problem controlling their anger. Of course, this practice also works for adults. When you are at home and find yourself starting to get upset and angry, go to the Ganesha shrine in your room. Number one, repeat some chants or songs to Lord Ganesha for 5 minutes. Number two, while you are chanting or singing, feel the peaceful Shakti that radiates out from Lord Ganesha and visualize it permeating you and making you feel more calm and peaceful. When you are finished, thank Lord Ganesha for his help in lessening your upset and anger. Number three, next, close your eyes in meditation and regulate your breath, breathing in 9 counts, holding one, breathing out 9 counts, and holding one. Number four, once you have established this rhythmic breathing pattern, for 5 minutes, visualize the color light blue flooding out from the center of your spine and filling your aura and surrounding your body. The light blue will further neutralize the fiery reds of anger that are in your aura, and before you know it, the anger and resentment will be gone. Number five, end your meditation and leave your room. Then perform 3 kindly acts for the persons you got upset with. This completes the practice. As Ganesha is naturally the first deity to worship, learning to do puja to Ganesha in the home shrine is a natural first step in performing home puja. To encourage this, we published in the April 2006 issue of Hinduism Today, a simple Ganesha home puja. And it's going to be on the literature table there. So free copies of it are available as part of our literature display. There is also a professional recording of the entire puja on our website that can be used to learn the correct pronunciation. The recording is by Dr. Tyagarajan, head of the Sanskrit department at Presidency College in Chennai. He is well known for the 120 CDs of Vedic chanting he has released to date, and this recording is of the same professional caliber. In fact, we did an article on him and his love of mantras in the July 2004 issue of our magazine, Hinduism Today. It's very well done, by the way. You might enjoy, if you haven't listened to it, you might enjoy listening to it. The URL is in the magazine. It shows where it is. It is important to mention that daily worship in the home shrine does not eliminate the need to worship at a temple. Weekly worship at a temple allows us to experience the blessings of God and the gods in a stronger way than the home shrine. This is because of the special way the temple is constructed, consecrated, and the continuous daily worship that occurs thereafter. Temple is built according to certain rules laid down in Scripture. This governs what shrines are included in the temple, the shrine's location, and the overall dimensions of the temple. Consecration occurs through the powerful ceremony of Kumbhabhishekam, which involves a large number of priests performing elaborate ceremonies for days on end. Then begins the schedule of daily pujas that are held thereafter, conducted by professional priests. An additional factor that distinguishes the temple from the family shrine is that no family lives in the temple. The activities there are only of a religious nature. All of these factors combined are what make the temple much more powerful than the home shrine. On one of my trips recently, I think it was about 6 or 7 year old boy, I explained the home shrine as and how the home is like a temple and all, and then he asked me the question, well, why do you need to go to the temple if the home is like a temple? So this is the answer for him. In case there's any children there that say, well, we don't have to go to the temple anymore. Home is like a temple. And as I always like to mention, when attending the temple, it is important to always bring a flower or fresh fruit for each shrine at which you are going to worship. The act of giving opens you to the blessings of the deity. Never visit the temple empty-handed. The blessings received at the temple remove impurities we have accumulated by our negative and worldly thoughts or association with others who are having such thoughts. It also lifts our energies up into the higher chakras and thus strengthens our resolve to live a dharmic life and be regular in our sadhanas. Tending the temple also strengthens the home shrine, particularly if we light an oil lamp in the shrine when we return from the temple. This sacred act brings devas who are at the temple right into the home shrine, where from the inner world they can bless all family members and strengthen the religious force field of the home. Of course, the ultimate purpose of worship in the home shrine and at temples is to come ever closer to God through deepening our devotion. The concept of the four margas of Saivism is an excellent illustration of what this means. The first stage is called the Dasa Marga, meaning path of servitude, for here the soul relates to God as servant to master. The second stage is called the Satputra Marga, in which our relationship with God is as a child to his parents. Third stage is called the Sakamarga, as God is now like a friend to us. And the fourth and final stage is called the Sanmarga, true path, in which God is our dearest beloved, and the distinction between worshiper and worshipped disappears. In other words, as our devotion deepens, we feel closer and closer to God, and finally reach the point where we feel a oneness with God. Let me conclude with a story about our Guru's Guru, Yogaswami of Jaffna, Sri Lanka, which provides an interesting illustration of this principle of oneness. Once a devotee of Yogaswami's had a bath, wore clean clothes, and was getting ready to see Swami. However, he was saddened by the thought that his heart was not as clean as his body and clothes. He couldn't control his mind and was descending further into sinful ways. His thoughts were so despicable that he could not even discuss it with his friends. He felt that even his parents would despise him if they knew. He was ashamed to go before Swami with such thoughts. But being an ardent devotee, he couldn't keep away either. So he decided he would prostrate himself before Swami and cry his heart out. On the way, he hoped that Swami would not be in meditation, because if he was, then he would perceive his evil thoughts. As he entered the ashram, he found Swami happily conversing with his disciples. I have escaped, thought the devotee as he worshipped him. Then Swami looked at him with a smile and said, I know everything from your head to your toes. I know all your thoughts, not only yours, but everybody's. I am in everybody. You do not know this because you think of yourself as being separate from others. Learn to consider yourself as the same as others and not separate. Then taking the camphor tray that was burning before him, he gave it to his devotee and said, take this light and considering everyone here to be Shiva, worship them. Well, that's where it stands at the moment. It's an interesting practice that Yogaswami has. Find it here. He would say, I am in you, or I am in everybody. We were editing the Line of Gurus stories, and there's one about this famous yogi who was coming back from India. He studied many years in India. He's originally from Jaffna, Rajayogi, is that his name? Rajayogi. Very famous. And so he was coming and there was a big reception for him planned at the Colombo train station. And as is the tradition there, you're never sure something's going to happen. So they sent devotees from Jaffna all the way to Colombo to come on the train with the person to make sure the person would arrive. So, but then Rajayogi felt Yogaswami on the train. He said, there's a great sage, a great light on this train. And then he felt the great light, the great sage, get off the train at the station before Jaffna and wanted to jump off the train and go talk to him, you know, and miss the reception. So the people with him convinced him to stay on the train, and then he wanted to skip the reception at the station, and they finally talked him into just staying for a few minutes at the reception and then going off to see Yogaswami. So when he went off to see Yogaswami, he prostrated the Yogaswami, which shocked everyone. Because they thought he was the famous person, you know, and he was prostrating the Yogaswami, who they weren't considering famous at that point. And so one of the things Yogaswami said was, I am in you. So, which is what I remembered when I read that. And of course, when Gurudeva met Yogaswami, Yogaswami said that, I am in you. And Gurudeva said back, I am in you. Remember that? So I don't know if anyone else ever said that back to Yogaswami. That's the point I was leading up to, you know. Usually you say, I am in you, and everyone says, oh, he's in me. Oh, this is great. Yogaswami's inside of me. But Gurudeva said back, I am in you. So a wonderful idea there. And of course, it's that idea, you know, we talked about in the, it's in the next publisher's desk. No. Next one? The last one. Next one. Which I've read, you know, the nature of the soul. You know, how when you look at someone and go, you know, look at the life force in them, the life in them, you're seeing the soul. But if you go deeply enough into that, then the souls of everyone are like a one being, which is another way of saying I am in you. You're identified with the essence of the soul, which makes it feel like everything is one. And so there's no separation, which of course is Yogaswami's constant state of mind. He never sees separation between himself and anyone else because he's always identified with the oneness which permeates everyone. And therefore he's in everything because he's identifying with the oneness that's inside of all of us. So very interesting approach, which makes the, you know, the idea of experiencing God seem very near instead of far away. You know, it's a wonderful statement in Gurudeva's teachings. You know, God Shiva is nearer than your hands and feet, you know, closer than your breathing. You know, it just, when you start to think about it like that, it puts it in a different perspective. It makes it more immediate, which is what it should be. You know, we don't want to put God Shiva at a distance from us. We want God Shiva to be closer than our breathing, closer than our hands or feet. That's the idea. So, have a wonderful week.